Chapter 5. Though quite ready to acknowledge the absurdity of his love for a penniless alehouse servant girl, nevertheless persisted in it doggedly. "No, I'm a fool," said he, "and what's more, the girl does not care for me, but marry her I must, or I think I shall just die. And marry her I will." For very much to the credit of Miss Catherine's modesty, as he had declared that marriage was with her a sine qua non, and had dismissed, with the loudest scorn and indignation, all propositions of a less proper nature. Poor Thomas Bullock was another of her admirers, and had offered to marry her, but 3 shillings a week and a pudden was not to the girl's taste, and Thomas had been scornfully rejected. Hayes had also made her a direct proposal. Catherine did not say no. She was too prudent. But she was young and could wait. She did not care for Mr. Hayes yet enough to marry him. It did not seem, indeed, in the young woman's nature to care for anybody, and she gave her adorer flatteringly to understand that, if nobody better appeared in the course of a few years, she might be induced to become Mrs. Hayes. It was a dismal prospect for the poor fellow to live upon the hope of being one day Mrs. Catherine's pissaller. In the meantime she considered herself free as the wind, and permitted herself all the innocent gaieties which that hard-earned libertine, a coquette, can take. She flirted with all the bachelors, widowers, and married men, in a manner which did extraordinary credit to her years. And let not the reader fancy such pastimes unnatural at her early age. The ladies, heaven bless them, are, as a general rule, coquettes from babyhood upwards. Little she's of 3 years old play little airs and graces upon small heroes of 5. Simpering misses of 9 make attacks upon young gentlemen of 12. And at 16, a well-grown girl, under encouraging circumstances, say, she is pretty, in a family of ugly elder sisters, or an only child and heiress, or a humble wench at a country inn, like our fair Catherine is at the very pink and prime of her coquetry. They will jilt you at that age with an ease and arch infant and simplicity that never can be surpassed in mature years. Miss Catherine, then, was a French coquette, and Mr. John Hayes was miserable. His life was passed in a storm of mean passions and bitter jealousies, and desperate attacks upon the indifference rock of Mrs. Catherine's heart, which not all his tempest of love could beat down. Oh, cruel, cruel pangs of love unrequited! Mean rogues feel them as well as great heroes. Lives there the man in Europe who has not felt them many times, who has not knelt, and fawned, and supplicated, and wept, and cursed, and raved, all in vain, and passed long wakeful nights with ghosts of dead hopes for company, shadows of buried remembrances, that glide out of their graves of nights, and whisper, "We are dead now, but we were once, and we made you happy, and we come now to mock you." Despair, O lover, despair, and die? O cruel pangs! Dismal nights! Now a sly demon creeps under your nightcap, and drops into your ear those soft hope-breathing sweet words, uttered on the well-remembered evening. There, in the drawer of your dressing table along with the razors, and macassar oil, lies the dead flower that Lady Amelia Wilhelmina wore in her bosom on the night of a certain ball, the corpse of a glorious hope that seemed once, as if it would live forever, so strong was it, so full of joy and sunshine. There, in your writing desk, among a crowd of unpaid bills, is the dirty scrap of paper, thimble sealed, which came in company with a pair of muffetees of her knitting. She was a butcher's daughter, and did all she could, poor thing. Comma begging who would wear them at college, and think of her who married a public house 3 weeks afterwards, and cares for you no more now than she does for the potboy. But why multiply instances, or seek to depict the agony of poor mean-spirited John Hayes? No mistake can be greater than that of fancying such great emotions of love are only felt by virtuous or exalted men. Depend upon it, love, like death, plays havoc among the pauperum tabernas, and sports with rich and poor, wicked and virtuous, alike. I have often fancied, for instance, on seeing the haggard pale young old clothesman, who wakes the echoes of our street with his nasal cry of, "Lo! I have often," I said, "fancied that, besides the load of exuvial coats and breeches under which he staggers, there is another weight on him and attrier cura at his tail, and while his unshorn lips and nose together are performing that mocking, boisterous, jack-indifferent cry of lo, clo, who knows what woeful utterances are crying from the heart within? There he is, chaffering with the footman at number 7 about an old dressing gown. You think his whole soul is bent only on the contest about the garment. Sah! There is, perhaps, some faithless girl in Holywell Street who fills up his heart, and that desultory Jew boy is a peripatetic hell. Take another instance. Take the man in the beef shop in St. Martin's Court. There he is, to all appearances quite calm. Before the same round of beef from morning till sundown for hundreds of years very likely. Perhaps when the shutters are closed, and all the world tired and silent, there is he silent, but untired cutting, cutting, cutting. You enter, you get your meat to your liking, you depart, and, quite unmoved, on he goes, reaping ceaselessly the great harvest of beef. You would fancy that, if passion ever failed to conquer, it had in vain assailed the calm bosom of that man. I doubt it, and would give much to know his history. Who knows what furious Etna flames are raging underneath the surface of that calm flesh mountain? Who can tell me that that calmness itself is not despair? Asterisk, 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 the reader, if he does not now understand why it was that Mr. Hayes agreed to drink the corporal's proffered beer, had better just read the foregoing remarks over again, and if he does not understand then, why, small praise to his brains. Hayes could not bear that Mr. Bullock should have a chance of seeing, and perhaps making love to Mrs. Catherine in his absence, and though the young woman never diminished her coquetries, but, on the contrary, rather increased them in his presence, it was still a kind of dismal satisfaction to be miserable in her company. On this occasion, the disconsolate lover could be wretched to his heart's content. For Catherine had not a word or a look for him, but bestowed all her smiles upon the handsome stranger who owned the black horse. As for poor Thomas Bullock, his passion was never violent, and he was content in the present instance to sigh and drink beer. He sighed and drank again, until he had swallowed so much of the corporal's liquor as to be induced to accept a guinea from his purse also, and found himself, on returning to reason and sobriety, a soldier of Queen Anne's. But oh, fancy the agonies of Mr. Hayes when, seated with the corporal's friends at one end of the kitchen, he saw the captain at the place of honor, and the smiles which the fair maid bestowed upon him, when, as she lightly whisked past him with the captain's supper, she, pointing to the locket that once reposed on the breast of the Dutch lady at the Brill, looked archly on Hayes and said, "See, John, what his lordship has given me," and when John's face became green and purple with rage and jealousy, Mrs. Catherine laughed 10 times louder, and cried, "Oming, my lord," in a voice of shrill triumph that bored through the soul of Mr. John Hayes, and left him gasping for breath. On Catherine's other lover, Mr. Thomas, this coquetry had no effect. He, and 2 comrades of his, had by this time quite fallen under the spell of the corporal, and Hope, Glory, strong beer, Prince Eugene, pair of colors, more strong beer, Her Blessed Majesty, plenty more strong beer, and such subjects, Marshall and Bacchic, whirled through their dizzy brains at a railroad pace. And now, if there had been a couple of experienced reporters present at the Oogle Inn, they might have taken down a conversation on love, and wore the 2 themes discussed by the 2 parties occupying the kitchen which, as the parts were sung together, duet-wise, formed together some very curious harmonies. Thus, while the captain was whispering the softest nothings, the corporal was shouting the fiercest combats of the war, and, like the gentleman at Penelope's table, on the exiguo pins it praliatota bureau. For example, "Captain, what do you say to a silver trimming, pretty Catherine? Don't you think a scarlet riding cloak, handsomely laced, would become you wonderfully well? And a gray hat with a blue feather and a pretty nag, to ride on, and all the soldiers, to present arms as you pass, and say, there goes the captain's lady? What do you think of a side box at Lincoln's Inn Playhouse, or of standing up to a minuet with my Lord Marquiat? Corporal. The ball, sir, ran right up his elbow, and was found the next day by Surgeon Splinter of ours. Where do you think, sir? Upon my honor as a gentleman, it came out of the nape of his captain. Necklace and a sweet pair of diamond earrings, makeup and a little shower of patches, which ornament a lady's face wondrously, and a little rouge though, egad. Such peach cheeks as yours don't want it. Fie. Mrs. Catherine, I should think the birds must come, and peck at them, as if they were fruit, corporal. Over the wall, and 23 of our fellows jumped after me. By the Pope of Rome, friend Thomas, that was a day. Had you seen how the mounseers looked, when 24 rampaging he-devils, sword and pistol, cut and thrust, pell-mell came tumbling into the redoubt. Why, sir, we left in 3 minutes as many artillerymen's heads as there were cannonballs. It was a sasser. You, take that. Mon Dieu. Unum through. Ventrebleu. And it was ventrebleu with him, I warrant you. For blue, in the French language, means row. And ventre, why, you see, ventre means captain. Waists, which are worn now excessive long. And for the hoops, if you could but see them stab my vitals, my dear. But there was a lady at Warwick's assembly, she came in one of my lord's coaches, who had a hoop as big as a tent. You might have dined under it comfortably. Ha, ha. Pon my faith, now, corporal. And there we found the Duke of Marlborough seated along with Marshal Tallard, who was endeavoring to drown his sorrow over a cup of Johannesburger wine. And a good drink too, my lads, only not to compare to Warwick beer. Who was the man who has done this? Said our noble general. I stepped up. How many heads was it, says he, that you cut off? Innocent, says I, besides wounding several. When he heard it, Mr. Hayes, you don't drink, I'm blessed, if he didn't burst into tears. Oble noble fellow, says he. Marshal, you must excuse me, if I am pleased to hear of the destruction of your countrymen. Noble, noble fellow, here's 100 guineas for you, which sum he placed in my hand. Eh, says the marshal, he man has done his duty, and, pulling out a magnificent gold diamond hilted snuff box, he gave me, Mr. Bullock. What, a gold snuff box? Wounds, but thee wast in luck, corporal. Corporal. No, not the snuff box, but a pinch of snuff. Ha, ha, run me through the body if he didn't. Could you but have seen the smile on Jack Churchill's grave face at this piece of generosity. So, beckoning Colonel Cadogan up to him, he pinched his ear and whispered, Captain, I have the honor to dance a minuet with your ladyship? The whole room was in titters at Jack's blunder, for, as you know very well, poor Lady Susan has a wooden leg. Ha! Ha! Fancy a minuet and a wooden leg, hey, my dear? Mrs. Catherine. Giggle, giggle, giggle. He. 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 Oh, Captain, you rogue, you second table. Ha! 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 Well, you be a funny man, Sergeant Zurenov. Asterisk, 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 this little specimen of the conversation must be sufficient. It will show pretty clearly that each of the two military commanders was conducting his operations with perfect success. Three of the detachment of 5 attacked by the corporal surrendered to him. Mr. Bullock, namely, who gave in at a very early stage of the evening, and ignominiously laid down his arms under the table, after standing not more than a dozen volleys of beer. Mr. Blacksmith's boy, and a laborer whose name we have not been able to learn. Mr. Butcher himself was on the point of yielding, when he was rescued by the furious charge of a detachment that marched to his relief. His wife, namely, who, with 2 squalling children, rushed into the Oogle, boxed butcher's ears, and kept up such a tremendous fire of oaths and screams upon the corporal, that he was obliged to retreat. Fixing then her claws into Mr. Butcher's hair, she proceeded to drag him out of the premises, and thus Mr. Brock was overcome. His attack upon John Hayes was a still greater failure, for that young man seemed to be invincible by drink, if not by love. And at the end of the drinking bout was a great deal more cool than the corporal himself, to whom he wished a very polite good evening, as calmly he took his hat to depart. He turned to look at Catherine, to be sure, and then he was not quite so calm. But Catherine did not give any reply to his good night. She was seated at the captain's table playing at cribbage with him. And though Count Gustavus Maximilian lost every game, he won more than he lost, sly fellow. And Mrs. Catherine was no match for him. It is to be presumed that Hayes gave some information to Mrs. Score, the landlady. For, on leaving the kitchen, he was seen to linger for a moment in the bar, and very soon after Mrs. Catherine was called away from her attendance on the Count, who, when he asked for a sack and toast, was furnished with those articles by the landlady herself. And, during the half hour in which he was employed in consuming this drink, Monsieur de Galgenstein looked very much disturbed, and out of humor, and cast his eyes to the door perpetually. But no Catherine came. At last, very sulkily, he desired to be shown to bed, and walked as well as he could, for, to say truth, the noble Count was by this time somewhat unsteady on his legs, to his chamber. It was Mrs. Score who showed him to it, and closed the curtains, and pointed triumphantly to the whiteness of the sheets. "It's a very comfortable room," said she, "though not the best in the house, which belong of right to your lordship's worship, but our best room has two beds, and Mr. Corporal is in that, locked and double locked, with his three tipsy recruits. But your honor will find this here bed comfortable and well aired. I've slept in it myself this 18 years. What, my good woman, you are going to sit up, eh? It's cruel hard on you, madam. Sit up, my lord? Bless you, no. I shall have half of our cat's bed, as I always do when there's company." And with this Mrs. Score curtsied and retired. Very early the next morning the active landlady and her bustling attendant had prepared the ale and bacon for the corporal and his three converts, and had set a nice white cloth for the captain's breakfast. The young blacksmith did not eat with much satisfaction, but Mr. Bullock and his friend betrayed no sign of discontent, except such as may be consequent upon an evening's carouse. They walked very contentedly, to be registered before Dr. Dobbs, who was also Justice of the Peace, and went in search of their slender bundles, and took leave of their few acquaintances without much regret. For the gentleman had been bred in the workhouse, and had not, therefore, a large circle of friends. It wanted only an hour of noon, and the noble Count had not descended. The men were waiting for him, and spent much of the Queen's money earned by the sale of their bodies overnight, while thus expecting him. Perhaps Mrs. Catherine expected him to, for as he had offered many times to run up with my lord's boots with the hot water, to show Mr. Brock the way, who sometimes condescended to officiate as barber. But on all these occasions Mrs. Score had prevented her, not scolding, but with much gentleness and smiling. At last, more gentle and smiling than ever, she came downstairs and said, "Catherine, darling, his honor the Count is mighty hungry this morning, and vows he could pick the wing of a fowl. Run down, child, to Farmer Briggs and get one. Pluck it before you bring it, you know, and we will make his lordship a pretty breakfast." Catherine took up her basket, and away she went by the backyard. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.